think so, I said with a smirk. Bonnie smiled back and shook her head. I'm kidding. Delaney could have slept with anyone. I just made her feel like even more of a rebel. How so? You know how so. Sleeping with a bag boy, a status that was beneath her. She got off on bucking the system, whether in the form of her swimwear or her choice of screws. Did she tell you that? Not in so many words. But she talked about that shit a lot. Money and social class. She even used that word a lot. Classy. I rolled my eyes, feeling the inferiority all over again. So you didn't feel like star-crossed lovers? No, I felt like a pawn, I said. Then one night she really went too far. Uh-oh, what did she do? Bonnie asked. She used the expression salt of the earth to describe my mother. Always getting it, Bonnie winced, then groaned. Yeah, I kind of lost my shit. I told her it was a condescending expression. I said, envisioning Delaney sitting on the cement floor of my basement, sipping from a can of Budweiser, calmly insisting that the term was a compliment, synonymous with sweet and wholesome. I told Bonnie how I had asked Delaney what about my mother came across as sweet or wholesome when all she had done was say, "Hello, nice to meet you. Would you like a drink? We have Diet Pepsi and OJ." Bonnie laughed a hearty, open-mouthed laugh. And her reply? She got defensive. She didn't like getting called out. She liked doing the calling out. But I pressed her. I asked if she'd ever call a doctor or lawyer salt of the earth, or if there were any country club members who she could describe as salt of the earth. She said no, because they all sucked. I remember thinking that they couldn't all suck, any more than all single mothers were salt of the earth. But I dropped the subject. I figured it didn't matter enough to argue about.
Why didn't it matter enough?
Because she didn't matter enough, I said with a shrug. I was over it. Her. Right then and there.
So you broke up that night?
Yep. I said, not admitting that we'd actually had sex a few other times before I decided once and for all that I didn't want to be the guy she slummed with. It didn't take Bonnie long to give me her full hypothesis. She didn't use the words chip on your shoulder, but more or less that's what she said. Basically, she concluded that I'd felt used by Delaney, my self-esteem damaged by both her and the whole Belmead Country Club experience. Somewhere deep within myself, she believed, I believed that I didn't measure up, and afterward sought out people and situations where I'd feel less vulnerable to rejection. The irony was, of course, that I ended up with Beatrice, who ultimately left me too, hence reinforcing my fears and sense of isolation. Bonnie's words, not mine. Her theory made good sense, but for the fact that I didn't spend a lot of time dwelling on the past. Nor did I think much about my present lack of friendships. In fact, the only time I really thought about my social life at all was when Lila pointed it out, sometimes in the form of concern.
You should go out more, Dad.
And sometimes in the form of an accusation, when I would tell her she couldn't do something.
You want me to be like you and have no friends?
But then all this happened with Finch, and suddenly I did feel a little lonely, lost. It kept striking me as pretty pathetic that I had nobody to discuss the situation with, which is how I remembered that I actually did have someone to talk to. So I drove over to Bonnie's. You think it's weird how few friends I have? I asked her pretty much out of the gate, as we stood in her kitchen and she fired up her stove to make us tea. Tea was the starting point of all of our visits.
Weird? No, I wouldn't use that word. You're an introvert. Not everyone needs a posse,
Bonnie said, stressing the word posse, She loved to sprinkle in what she considered to be current slang, although she was usually about a decade off. But I had a posse as a kid, before Beatrice, I said. Bonnie nodded. Yes, I remember you mentioning that. One of the fellows was the guy who got you the golf course job? Yes, John. Also, Steve and Gerard, I said, giving her a rundown on our foursome, how we had grown up together, roaming around the woods near our neighborhood as boys, then coming of age with a backdrop of beer, pot, and heavy metal music. When I think back to high school, I think of that group of guys, plus John's longtime girlfriend, Karen, as cool as any dude, sitting around and just shooting the shit, talking about everything and nothing. Our favorite topic was how much we hated Nashville, at least our part of town, and how much we wanted to get the hell out of there and have lives different than those of the grown-ups grinding it out in low-paying jobs around us. With the most book smarts and drive among us, only John actually succeeded in doing that. He went to Miami of Ohio for undergrad, Northwestern for business school, and landed on Wall Street, trading bonds, smoking expensive cigars, and wearing his hair all slicked back like Michael Douglas playing Gordon Gekko. Meanwhile, I went to junior college for 3 semesters before running out of money and going into carpentry. And Steve and Gerard went into their respective family trades, becoming an insurance salesman and an electrician. The only real twist in the story is that when John and Karen broke up, she ended up dating Steve, then breaking up with Steve to marry Gerard. It was a wonder we'd survived those breaches of the man code at all. So, who do you now consider your closest friend? Bonnie asked as her kettle began to whistle, then screech. She grabbed the handle with an oven mitt, moving it to a back burner, instantly silencing it. I smiled and said, "Other than the lady who stiffed me for the treehouse?" Bonnie laughed and said, "Yes, other than that old bat." I shrugged, explaining that the four of us, sans Karen, still tried to meet up when John came back to town to visit his folks every other Thanksgiving or so. But the dynamic felt a little forced. "So, are you lonely? Or is this about something else?" Bonnie said. I looked at her, thinking that she was kind of brilliant. "Something else," I said. "But I might need something stronger than tea." Bonnie smiled, turned off the stove, and poured us both a glass of clear liquor, neat. "What's this?" I said, swirling it in my glass.
"Gin," she said. "It's all I have."
I nodded, then took the glass and followed her to her back porch, where we sat on wicker chairs and gazed up in the tree at my handiwork. As we sipped, I told her the whole story, everything, ending with Nina and Finch's visit, and Finch asking for my permission to ask Lila out. Bonnie whistled and shook her head.
"What did you tell him? Wait, let me guess. Over your dead body?"
"Not exactly, actually."
"Really?"
"Yes, really. Why so surprised? I thought you believed in forgiveness," I said, "letting go of bitterness and all that stuff."
"I do," she said, "but you don't."
"Good point," I said, "but I'm trying to set a better example. I'd rather Lila be like you than me." Bonnie smiled. "So I'm hoping she says no on her own, that she accepts his apology but still wants nothing to do with him. I'm hoping this has taught her a few things about self-respect." Bonnie nodded, then squinted up at the sky. The late afternoon sun highlighted all her lines and wrinkles, making her look older than I thought of her as. Then again, she probably was in her early 70s by now, which somehow seemed so much older than one's late 60s. At 47, I thought about how fast I would get there, too. I was almost 50, for fuck's sake. How had that happened?
What if she says yes? What if she ends up really liking him?
She asked tentatively, reaching down to stroke one of her two black cats, who was just moseying by. I guess I'd cross that bridge, I said, with your help.
Do you think he likes her? Or is he...
She struggled to find the right slang. Playing her? Bonnie nodded.
Yeah, that.
I can't tell, I said. Maybe both. I know I'm biased, but Lila really is a special girl. Bonnie squinted harder, deep in thought.
Well, what could it really hurt if they did go out?
She could get her heart broken, I said.
God forbid she take that risk,
she quipped, clearly making a separate point.
It's not the same thing, I said, knowing she was about to get on her soapbox about my personal life. I don't have time for that stuff. Nonsense, she said. People make time for what matters to them.
Not interested, I said. I've seen what's out there. No thanks.
If only Nina was single, huh?
She said breezily, almost under her breath. What's that supposed to mean? I said, though I knew exactly what it meant.
I think you like her.
I do like her, I said, playing it cool.
Like her, like her.
I rolled my eyes, trying to remember exactly what I'd just said about Nina. That she was attractive, that she was much nicer than her husband, that she had been kind to Lila. Certainly none of that indicated I had feelings for her. Don't be an ass, I said, feeling a little guilty about calling an older lady an ass. But I knew Bonnie could handle it, maybe even liked it.
You're denying it, she said.
Hell yeah, I'm denying it. For one, she's married.
So?
Bonnie said.
When has that ever stopped anyone?
Cynic, I said, thinking that I had never touched a married woman.
Well?
Well, for another, she's the mother of this jerk kid.
The same jerk kid who you gave permission to ask your daughter out?
I told you, I want Lila to come to her own conclusions. And maybe, if she and Finch become friends, she could spend a little time with Nina. That would be good for her, no? Bonnie nodded, a hint of a smirk on her face.
What?
I said.
Nothing.
Tell me.
You don't feel anything for this woman? Not even a teensy-tiny crush?
That's the wrong word for it entirely.
What's the right word? She said. What's that look you keep getting on your face when you talk about her? Intrigue?
That's too strong, too. At most, maybe I'm a little curious.
About?
I shrugged. I don't know. I just kind of want to know her deal, like how she ended up with that douchebag of a husband. Bonnie rubbed her fingers together in the universal sign of money and raised one eyebrow. Yeah, maybe, I said. But I get the feeling it's not that simple. She just doesn't strike me as a gold digger. Something else is going on there. It's almost as if she's... I don't know.
Do you think there is abuse? Bonnie said.
No. Nothing that sinister. That's not my read, anyway. But something doesn't add up, I said. She's clearly not in sync with the guy. Like, I don't think she's told him we've met at all. She seems trapped, at the very least unhappy. Really unhappy. Bonnie nodded, then said,
What if she ends up having a romantic interest in you?
Not possible, I said as quickly and adamantly as I could, even while I wondered what it might be like to kiss Nina. When I got home a few hours later, I noticed that Lila had changed clothes and was now wearing a sundress that I hadn't seen before. "That's pretty," I said, pointing at it. "Are you going out?"
"Yeah," she said. "I'm going to the Luke Bryan concert, if that's okay."
"With who?" I said.
"Grace," she said.
"Where's the show?"
12th and Porter.
I nodded. "How are you getting there?"
"Grace is picking me up. We're getting ready at her house."
"Why not get ready here?"
"She has a bigger bathroom."
"Okay. But remember, your curfew is 11.
"I know, Dad,"
she said with a loud sigh. I looked at her a long beat, then said, "All right, Lila. Have fun. Just please, don't let me down." Later that night, after Lila was picked up by Grace and I did a few things around the house, I decided I'd drive a little to distract myself from my feeling of doom and gloom. So I did about 4 uneventful trips, including a back and forth from the airport, all with solo passengers and no conversation, exactly how I like it. A little before 10, I got pinged for a pickup at 404 Kitchen, a nice restaurant in the Gulch. The drop-off was for number 308, a bar on Gallatin Avenue. I knew from experience with those locations that I was probably getting one of two rides, either a couple on a date or a girl's night out. If the latter, they'd likely be single women or divorcees. Married women typically got together on weekdays, not weekends. Either way, they'd be drunk or well on their way, which I guess was the whole point of Uber. Sure enough, when I pulled up to the restaurant, I saw a pair of middle-aged women who looked like they were having a big time. As they both slid ungracefully into my car, their intoxication was confirmed by all the usual hallmarks, most notably loud, shallow, repetitive commentary. I quickly gathered that the alpha, bitchier of the two was married. The other, who happened to be prettier but perhaps a bit dimmer, was either single or divorced. To be clear, I gathered all that not because I was interested in anything they had to say, but simply because it was impossible to tune them out. At the moment, they were focusing on some guy they'd just run into outside the restaurant.
"You know who that was, right?" Married said.
"No. Who?"
"The CEO of Hedberg. He's worth a bloody fortune, and his wife just passed away. Cancer," she said, as if announcing tomorrow's weather forecast.
Single sighed and said, "That's so sad."
"Yes, which means he's going to need lots of comfort." Married let out a snort.
"Jackie, that's awful," Single said,
but she did not sound appalled, as the two turned their attention to their phones, namely the selfies they'd just taken outside the restaurant. Here we go, I thought, the debate about which photos to delete and which to post. Sure enough, a very familiar and painful script ensued.
"Delete?
Why, you don't like that one? It's adorable of you.
No, my arms look so fat. Delete it now."
"I can crop that.
Only if you crop my pale face, too.
I have the best app for that."
And on, until Married concluded, and the apparently more photogenic Single reluctantly agreed, that none were post-worthy, at which point they promptly began a hair and makeup session, followed by another photo shoot, complete with a discussion about their respective good sides. A second later, I was blinded by a flash.
"Whoa," I said under my breath.
"Oh, I'm sorry,"
Single said, reaching up to tap my shoulder.
"Are we bothering your driving?"
"I'm fine," I said, aware that these kinds of women were the most likely to slap you with a 1-star rating.
"He's probably enjoying the show," Married said, as if I couldn't hear her.
Against my better judgment, I glanced in the rearview mirror, in time to see her cleavage bulging out of her bra,
as excessive as the perfume one or both of them had doused themselves with.
"Sir, do you often have hot women taking selfies in the back of your car?"
Single asked proudly. Here we go, I thought again, preparing myself for full-on engagement, because typically it was all or nothing. They either ignored me completely or wanted to delve into a deep conversation about my life, which was really just a way to segue back to theirs. Not as often as I'd like, I said on autopilot. The two laughed, and Married reached up and put her hand on my arm.
Wait, I didn't catch your name.
Tom, I said. She repeated my name, turning it into a sing-songy two syllables, then said,
You are very strong. Do you get those muscles from driving Uber?
Jackie, Single said under her breath. Obviously he works out. Right, Tom?
Not really, I said as Married commenced massaging my shoulder and neck.
Jackie, Single said, let him drive. But he's so cute. You should be talking to him. Tom, are you single?
I said yes, aware that I was now moving into Uber pawn territory.
Divorced or never married? What's your story? Do you have a story?
Married pressed.
Everyone has a story, Single said. Right, Tom?
Nope, I said. No story here.
Oh, my God, Single gasped.
For a second, I thought maybe she somehow knew who I was. Perhaps I'd worked on her house or made her some custom piece of furniture. But then I saw in the rearview mirror that she was staring down at her phone.
Speaking of Married, guess who just texted me?
Who?
Kirk Browning. Be still, my heart.
I gripped my steering wheel more tightly. I had overheard plenty of incriminating conversations from the back seat of my car, and in some cases had had things directly confessed to me. But nothing like this. Nothing that felt pertinent to me. I told myself it wasn't. Not really.
Ugh, is that still going on?
Married asked.
Nothing's going on. We're friends, Single said. He just wants to talk.
Yeah, right, Married said.
He's going through a lot right now, Single said. All this stuff with Finch and the Mexican girl. Have you heard?
I bit my lip so hard I could taste blood. Now it was pertinent to me.
Of course. I heard. Saw the photo, too. I feel so sorry for Kirk. Why?
Single said, and for one second I thought she was going to redeem herself with a bold defense of Lila. Instead, she said,
Because his son's in trouble? Or because he's married to such a bitch?
A jolt of hate passed through my body as Married laughed and said,
She really is, and so full of herself. It's like, hey, honey, it's not your money.
No shit. I heard she grew up in a trailer park.
Really?
Married asked. Yeah, pretty sure.
But isn't she Jewish?
She is, Single gasped.
Well, that's a combo you don't see every day. Trailer Park Jew.
They laughed together. Then Single said,
So what do you think will happen? With Nina or Finch? Because I bet they both get axed. I hear the headmaster over there is a huge liberal.
As I white-knuckled the steering wheel, I felt another tap on my shoulder.
Aren't you glad you don't have to deal with this Belmead drama?
Single asked. I unclenched my jaw and said, Oh, you'd be surprised.
Oh, dear, were you listening to us?
She said, so full of herself. I told myself to play dumb, but I just couldn't. Yes, I said, then continued in a loud, clear voice. And for what it's worth, I agree. I don't think Finch will get away with what he did to that girl. Who, by the way, isn't Mexican, although that's kind of beside the point. Silence filled the back seat.
So you know the girl?
Married finally asked, suddenly sounding sober. Yeah, I said, pausing for a satisfying beat just as I pulled up to their destination, put my car in park, and stared at them over my shoulder. She's my daughter. So yeah, I know her pretty damn well. The second they were out of my car, I called Nina, ready to give her my enraged report. But in the few seconds it took for her to answer the phone, I calmed down just enough to change my mind. As pissed off as I was at what I'd just heard, for both Lila's sake and Nina's, getting involved in someone else's marriage was never a good idea. Things were already hard enough.
Hello? She said. Tom?
Yes. Hi, I said, wondering how it was possible to feel both rattled and relieved to hear someone's voice.
Is everything okay? She asked me.
Yeah, I said. Everything's fine. I just wanted to say thanks for today. For coming over with Finch, I said. Because I had to come up with something, but I also meant it.
Of course, she said. Thank you. It was really amazing of you to give him that chance.
You're welcome. Listen, I didn't realize it was so late. I'm sorry about that. I hope I didn't wake you or your husband. I said, tensing up, just thinking about that guy, and so wishing I could meet him in a dark alley.
No, it's fine. You didn't. Kirk's actually out of town. He travels a lot. And I was just sitting here, reading a little.
That sounds nice, I said. And although a quiet Saturday night reading did sound nice in theory, she sounded more lonely than anything else.
What about you? She asked. What did you do tonight?
Oh, I just worked some.
On someone's house? Or were you making furniture?
Neither. I drive for Uber on the side. Easy money, flexible gig, and I've always liked driving. It relaxes me, I said. Although they were all true statements, I didn't like the insecure feeling I had in my chest as I said them.
I know what you mean, she said. I like driving too sometimes.
My heart started to race as I carefully crafted my next statement. Yeah, so, funny thing. I actually drove a couple of women I think you might know.
Oh, really? Who?
One was named Jackie.
Jackie Allen?
Yeah, I think that was it, I said, trying to remember her last name from the ride request. Tall blonde, big hair, big breasts.
Yep, that's her, she said with a laugh.
But the other woman... I didn't catch her name. Generic looking, strong southern accent. Oh, and she might be divorced. Nina sighed.
Unfortunately, that doesn't narrow it down very much these days.
Yeah, I guess not.
So wait, how did you put together that I know Jackie?
Well, that's actually a funny story. Not ha-ha funny. Shitty funny. I babbled. She said nothing, waiting. Well, Finch and Lila came up. The incident.
Oh, no, she said.
Yeah.
What did they say? She asked.
You probably don't want to know, I said, wondering if she would press me, sort of hoping she would.
People are so gossipy, she said with a sigh.
Yeah, I said, trying to think of something else to say, or at least a way to get gracefully off the phone. But then she said my name as a question, all whispery, I caught my breath.
Yes, Nina?
She hesitated, then said,
Nothing. I'm just glad you called tonight.
You are? I said.
Yes, very. Thank you.
You're welcome, I said.
Then, with a huge knot in my chest, I made myself tell her goodbye.
Chapter 16. Lila. Wow, that was amazing, I said, over the ringing in my ears, as the four of us left the show and walked the few blocks toward Finch's car. I'd been to concerts before, sitting in seats my dad referred to as the nosebleeds, while I watched all of the action on the Jumbotron, and even that had thrilled me. But the experience tonight had been totally different. For one, there were only about 300 people in the entire audience. For another, we were so close to Luke that I could see individual hairs in his beard, and the stitching on his jeans, and the sweat on his cheeks. It was, without a doubt, the best night of my life so far. And that had as much to do with Finch as with Luke Bryan. No star could have melted me as much as Finch did when he put his arm around me during To the Moon and Back. It wasn't done in a coupley way. More like a friend hug, the same way I occasionally had slung my arm around Grace's shoulders. But still, the contact and closeness killed me. Totally amazing, I said again, almost in a state of disbelief. Yeah, it was a cool vibe, Finch said, his voice all chill and mellow. So cool, Grace said, her ponytail swishing back and forth as she and Beau walked in front of us. And he's so hot. Well, thank you, Beau said. She laughed and gave him a little shove. Not you, dummy, she said. Luke? Hey now, Beau said, putting his hands over his heart. Dummy? Aren't we on a date here? No, we aren't on a date, Grace said, continuing their flirty banter, which had been going since about midway through the show. You didn't even invite me. Lila did. Technically, she was correct. When Finch had called about the tickets that afternoon, he'd said there were four and that I was free to bring a friend. I'd made the mistake of telling Grace this part of the conversation, to which she'd replied that the whole thing seemed kind of sketchy. Like, why wouldn't Beau want to pick his own date? She had asked. I don't know, I'd floundered. Maybe he likes you. Highly doubtful, Grace had said, but I could tell she didn't hate the idea. And why isn't Finch taking Polly? They broke up. When? She'd asked, sounding suspicious. Why haven't I heard anything about that? Like a day ago, I'd said, making a split-second decision not to tell her the full story. I didn't want to lie to Grace, but I also wanted to keep my promise to Finch. At least for now. I told myself I could always tell her everything after the show, depending on how things went. I think maybe he's just trying to be nice, to, like, make up for things, I said, the words coming out awkwardly. Okay, I guess I'll go with you, she'd said, some part of her probably intrigued by the idea of going out with the two most popular senior boys. But don't get your hopes up. Oh, God, no, it's not like that, I'd said, even though I hoped beyond hope that it was exactly like that. So, what are you trying to say? Beau said to Grace now. I'm not gonna get it in. It wasn't the first outrageous thing he'd said tonight, but it was definitely the most. Grace groaned, then laughed and hip-checked him. A tough feat given that she came up to only his ribcage. Not with me, you're not.
Whoa! You're pretty strong for an imp, Beau said, pretending to trip on the curb.
What the fuck's an imp? Finch said, as he walked along beside me while reading something on his phone.
It's like a little woodland creature, like a gnome or some shit, Beau laughed, then nudged Grace and said, What do you weigh anyway? A 105 soaking wet?
I have no idea. I don't go around weighing myself with no clothes on, Grace said, her voice turning all high and coy, like she wanted him to picture her naked. As we neared Finch's car, parked in a surface lot a few blocks up on Grundy, next to the World Gym, he said,
Lila call shotgun.
Good deal, Beau said, as he opened the door for Grace, and Finch did the same for me.
I get to sit with my date.
I'm not your date, Grace giggled, climbing into the car.
We'll see about that, Beau said, getting in beside her, then sliding into the middle seat.
Move over, she said, laughing and pushing him away.
I'm good here, thanks, he said, putting his arm around her.
She shoved him again unsuccessfully. As Beau and Grace continued their antics, Finch walked around to get in the car, then slowly fastened his seatbelt, started the engine, and put the car in reverse. His foot on the brake, he glanced over at me, then looked into the rearview mirror.
So, what next? He said to all of us. Y'all want to grab a bite? The flip side or double dogs?
Oh my God, yes! The flip side, Grace said, as I saw out of the corner of my eye that she and Beau were now getting handsy.
Lila?
Finch said. I hesitated, checking my phone. It was 10 after 10. Yeah, I guess we could, I said, waffling, trying to do the calculation of time and distance, both of which I pretty consistently misjudged. I just need to be back by 11. I'd referenced having a lame curfew a couple times already, but it was the first time I'd come out and announced exactly what it was.
11?
Beau yelled, fumbling around behind my seat for a black backpack I'd noticed on the way over. Yeah, I know, it sucks, I mumbled, thinking that it didn't help matters that I lived on the other side of town from everyone else. Let me ask my dad if I can just be back to Grace's by 11. Or you can sleep over, Grace said. I shook my head, feeling sure he'd say no to a sleepover, especially given the last time I'd been at her house. So I composed a text making a smaller request. Concert just got out. Starving. Can we go get something to eat real fast? Can be to Grace's by 11, then home a little after? I threw in a few praying emojis for good measure, then watched his ellipses start to scroll. Slow typing was my dad's trademark, and it didn't seem to matter how short his replies were. They always took forever. Sure enough, his delayed response was still brief and to the point. No, be home by 11. Dad. Ugh, I said, reading it aloud in the voice I often use to imitate my father, part nerd, part drill sergeant. Finch laughed. He signs his text, Dad? Yeah, I said, with a chuckle. That's hilarious. Okay, I'll take you back to Grace's, Finch said, pulling up his Luke Bryan songs on his phone. As we turned out of the parking lot and onto Grundy Street, I felt myself start to relax, my concert high returning. Clearly Finch wasn't judging my curfew or really worried about anything, including Beau, who was now clicking his jewel, the same orange one I'd seen him use at his party. A few seconds later, the car filled with a cloud of vapor as Finch unrolled the two back windows about halfway. Over my shoulder, I watched Grace take a hit, murmuring that it tasted good.
You think that's good? You should taste something else, Beau said.
Ew, gross, Grace laughed as she passed the vape back to him.
Anyone up there?
Beau said, reaching into the front seat, offering it to us. I glanced at it, tempted, but I played it safe and shook my head. No thanks, I said casually. Not tonight.
Bro,
Beau said, now angling it toward Finch.
I'm good,
Finch said, looking distracted as he read something on his phone.
Can't you see I'm driving precious cargo here?
He gave me a little smile, but then turned back to his phone, texting with one hand. As I glanced out the window, Grace suddenly piped up from the back seat.
Well, if she's precious cargo, then you should probably stop texting and driving.
Her voice sounded harsh, and it made me glance over at Finch. Looking busted, he immediately dropped his phone to the seat, then tucked it under his left thigh. A weird vibe settled over the car before I cleared my throat and said, "She was just kidding."
"No, I'm not," Grace said.
I glanced into the back seat and gave her a panicked look, but she continued, all preachy and pissy.
"Texting and driving kills more people than drunk driving."
"God, Grace, chill," I said under my breath, as I looked at Finch to gauge his reaction.
"Nah, she's right," he said, giving me a little wink and one of his awesome smiles. "Bad habit. I'm really sorry, girls."
"Precious cargo," Grace said about 15 minutes later, after we'd been dropped off at her house and were alone in her driveway. She opened her mouth and made a gagging sound. I knew she was quoting Finch, but I had no clue what her point was, and why she'd gone from carefree party girl to complete buzzkill in a span of 3 miles and 10 minutes, totally ending the night on a bad note.
"What's with the 180? I said.
As we walked toward her car, I typed a quick text to Finch, thanking him again for the tickets.
"Well, let's just say I'm good at reading texts over people's shoulders."
"What's that supposed to mean?" I said, stopping to stare her down. "I'm not trying to hide anything." I held up my phone, showing her what I'd just written. "I just thanked him for the tickets, since you kind of forgot to."
"I'm not talking about your phone. I'm talking about Finch's. I saw him texting Polly," she said. "In the car. He was holding the screen away from you, but I could see it all."
My heart sank as I asked her what exactly she saw.
"Well, I saw Polly's name. I saw an I-L-Y. I saw a kissy emoji. And I saw the word lame."
"Lame?" I said.
"Yeah, lame."
"What was he calling lame?" I couldn't resist asking, just as it occurred to me that it might be a who, not a what.
"I don't know. Does it matter? You fill in the blank. Lame concert? Lame date? Lame night? Lame effort to pretend to break up with someone and like someone else so that she'll get you off the hook next week?"
"Okay, first of all," I said, "he could have been calling a lot of things lame that had nothing to do with us. Second of all, they did break up."
"Doubtful," Grace said, adjusting the strap of her Miu Miu crossbody bag. "Highly doubtful."
"Oh my God, Grace, because he texted her? What do you want him to do, block her?" I said. I'd never been in a serious relationship, but I saw how breakups worked. In most cases, it seemed that couples didn't just go cold turkey. They often kept talking, or fighting, or begging, or getting temporarily back together only to re-break up, in some combination.
"I didn't say he had to block her, but typically after you break up, you don't tell that person that you love them. And you don't throw shade at the girl you asked out on a date. I mean, shit, Lila, he used the word lame."
"Well, maybe he feels sorry for her. Maybe he's worried about her. Maybe he still loves her on some level."
"Yeah, and maybe he and Beau just set your ass up. With Luke Bryan tickets."
God, Grace, it was a fun night. A really fun night.
"Yeah, and I bet Finch is still having fun. I bet he's on his way to see her right now. I bet she doesn't even know he went out with you tonight. Or maybe she does, actually. Maybe she's in on the whole plan."
"Okay, look," I said, glancing down at my phone. "It's 10:40. I gotta get home. Are you okay to drive?"
"Yeah,
I took like one hit," she said. "I'm totally fine." "I didn't mean that. I mean your foul mood. Why are you so pissed at me?"
"I'm not pissed at you. I'm pissed at them," she said.
Our shoulders now squared toward each other as we stood behind the new white Jeep her parents had just given her for no reason at all.
"Them? So now you're mad at Beau, too? Because you seemed pretty into him all night."
"I'm not into him," she said, making no moves to get in her car. "Besides,
That was before I saw the text calling us lame.
He called us lame, or you just saw the word lame, I said.
She didn't answer, just kept staring at me. Look, Grace, this curfew thing isn't just a loose suggestion. My dad means it. You want me to just call him to get me? He's probably out driving anyway. I usually avoided mentioning my dad's side job, even to Grace, but at that moment, I really didn't give a shit about appearances of any kind.
No, I'll take you, she said, finally getting in her car.
As I got in beside her, I inhaled the new car smell and felt a wave of resentment. Although I never held Grace's money or nice things against her, they all irritated me now, along with her shitty, cynical attitude. Maybe she, with her music industry dad, could take a night like this for granted. There were plenty more sweet concerts with front row seats in her future. But she wasn't going to rain on my Luke Bryan parade. At the very least, I wanted tonight to be a good memory. We drove in silence for a few minutes before she cleared her throat and said, I'm sorry, Lila. I just don't want you to get hurt. More hurt. I know, I said. But it really is more complicated than you realize. How? She said, shrugging, while she kept her hands on the steering wheel. It just is, I said. How? She said again. I swallowed, feeling myself cave to her stronger personality and my need for her approval. Without Grace, I really had nothing at Windsor, and we both knew it. If I tell you something, do you promise not to tell anyone? I asked, knowing that it never worked that way, and maybe hoping that it wouldn't. That she might tell Mr. Q, or a guidance counselor, or another close friend. That the truth might come out.
Of course, she said. Okay, so here's the thing.
I paused, taking a few deep breaths.
Finch didn't take that photo of me, and he didn't caption it. And he didn't send it to anyone.
She looked at me, her eyebrows raised, then returned her eyes to the road.
Who did?
Polly, I said. From his phone. I expected a complete transformation, or at least a softening. But instead, she slapped the steering wheel and started to laugh.
Oh my God! He told you that?
Yes.
And you actually believe him?
Yes, I do, actually, I said, delving into the rest of the details. How he wasn't trying to get out of trouble, he just wanted me to know the truth. That he was willing to take the blame for Polly, because he was genuinely worried about her stability.
Wow, Lila. I thought you, of all people, would have more street smarts than this, she said, shaking her head.
Why would I have street smarts? I said, my face burning. Because I grew up on the wrong side of the river with a single dad who makes furniture and drives Uber?
What the heck does that mean? Grace snapped back.
Never mind, I said, because I knew I might be overreacting. Maybe I was reading too much into the expression. Maybe Grace simply meant that I usually had good instincts about people. Maybe it had nothing to do with any of that other stuff. And those were just my paranoid, insecure issues.
Can we just drop it?
Yeah, sure. We can drop it, Grace said, going all passive-aggressive on me as she cruised along in her pretty white Jeep.
No problemo.
But she didn't drop it. Instead, about 20 minutes after I got home, when I'd already been doubting myself, and doubting Finch, and generally feeling like shit. Grace sent me 3 photographs of Finch's car parked in the driveway of a big brick house, along with a text that said, "Look who went straight to Polly's." My heart sank. After all, it was one thing to text his ex. It was another to go over to her house the second he dropped us off. I still wasn't convinced that Polly hadn't taken the photo of me, but I decided that it really didn't matter. Either way, it seemed pretty clear that they were working as a team, and that Grace was right.
The Luke Bryan tickets were a bribe of some sort. A last-ditch effort to win me over. I scrolled back through my text thread with Finch, starting around 1 o'clock, when he'd first asked me what kind of music I liked. "A little bit of everything," I'd written back, trying so hard to be cool. I kept reading, cringing at myself, wishing that, at the very least, I'd played a little harder to get. Finch. Top 5 fave artists? Me. "That's too hard. So many." Finch. "Kay. Just 5 you're listening to lately." Me. "Walker Hayes, Bruno Mars, Jana Kramer, Jason Aldean, and Kirby Rose. New artist, but love her." Finch. "Cool. So mostly country?" Me. "Yeah." Finch. "What about Luke Bryan?" Me. "Love him." Finch. "He's playing tonight. Wanna try to go?" Me. "Seriously?" Finch. "Yeah, why not? Let me see if I can get tics." Me. "OMG, that would be amazing." Smiley face. Finch. "Got 4 tics. Wanna go with Beau and one of your friends?" Me. "Yes, I'll ask Grace." Me. "Grace is in." Finch. "Awesome. Did you mention Polly?" Me. "I told her y'all broke up." Finch. "But the rest of the stuff?" Me. "No." Finch. "Thanks. Don't want the drama. Have enough already." I scanned the rest of the thread, which was a discussion of logistics about the concert, followed by my final text, which I'd sent from Grace's driveway, thanking him. He had yet to reply to that one, of course. Picturing him with Polly, maybe hooking up, or maybe just laughing at me, I told myself I had to do something. At the very least, I had to let him know that I wasn't as stupid as he thought. My mind raced with all the things I could say to call him out, but I played it a little safe, settling on a snarky, "Having fun?" I stared at my screen, waiting. Seconds turned to minutes. Just as I was about to give up and take a shower, my phone rang. It was him. My hands shaking, I answered with a snippy hello. "Hi," he said, sounding oblivious. "Where are you?" I asked, as I sat down on my bedroom floor. "In my car," he said. "On the way home." "On the way home from where?" I said, hugging my knees with my left arm as my hair formed a protective curtain around me. "I just dropped Beau off. We ended up going to the flip side," he said, lying so easily I got a chill. "Why do you ask?"
"Why? You tell me why," I said. "Why are you lying to me?"
"Why do you think I'm lying?"
"Because you are," I said, trying to channel Grace. Any strong girl. Or at least someone who didn't care enough to get hurt like this. I thought of my mother, how nothing really fazed her. At least, not that she'd ever shared with me.
"What are you even talking about?" Finch said.
"I know where you were tonight. After you dropped me and Grace off? I'm not stupid."
I braced myself for more lying, since that's what liars do. But instead, he folded immediately.
"Okay, Lila, you're right. I'm sorry. I wasn't with Beau, and I didn't go to the flip side. I was with Polly."
"You're an ass," I said, welling up. "A total ass." He said nothing, though I could tell he was still on the phone. Seconds passed before he sighed and said,
"Okay. Can I please just explain?"
"No," I said, telling myself to hang up on him, but knowing I wouldn't. Instead, I just sat there, waiting and listening. A sick part of me hoping, once again.
"Polly knows about you," Finch said.
"What about me?" I said.
"She knows I went to the concert with you. She knows I like you, and..."
Finch said, pausing dramatically as the hope expanded in my chest so quickly that I felt as if my heart would explode.
"She knows I'm going to tell the truth about what she did to you.
Chapter 17. Nina. Right after Finch left for the concert, I poured myself a glass of wine. It crossed my mind that I was doing this too often, and that drinking alone was a sign of a problem, much like the one I sometimes accused Kirk of having. But I rationalized that wine was simply the nighttime version of coffee, more of a ritual than anything else, especially if you only had a glass or two. At some point, I called Kirk, partly because I was feeling lonely, but also because I was feeling guilty for keeping secrets from my husband. No matter what mistakes he'd made, I wanted to be honest. He didn't pick up, though, so I left a message, telling him that I hoped he was feeling better. A few minutes later, he called me back. Only he hadn't, at least not purposefully. He'd simply made an inadvertent pocket dial. I called out his name a few times, but when that didn't work, it never does, I listened, more out of boredom than any real curiosity or concern. Even after I heard a woman's voice, I told myself not to jump to paranoid conclusions. Yes, he'd said he'd had a migraine and was going to bed, but that didn't necessarily make this nefarious. Hell, she could be a female concierge, helping him get his headache meds from a nearby pharmacy. My service industry explanation calmed me for a few seconds, but then their interaction continued, an easy, back-and-forth rhythm suggesting a certain familiarity. Mostly, it was Kirk talking and the woman laughing. It reminded me that my husband could be really funny and charming, and I felt a pang for a dynamic that had seemed to slip away as gradually as Finch's open bedroom door policy. I couldn't remember the last time Kirk had had this much to say to me, let alone the last time he'd actually made me laugh. I strained to make out their words, but everything was too muffled. Even the volume was coming in and out, as if they were in motion, in a car, or walking somewhere. Then suddenly, their voices got clearer and louder, and I heard the woman say, "Honey," followed by my husband's unmistakable, "Oh, shit." Then he hung up on me. I sat there, stunned, yet still struggling to give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe I'd misheard her, "Honey." Maybe he'd said, "Oh, shit," about something else. He could have made a wrong turn, or stepped in a wad of gum, or realized he'd left his credit card at a store where he'd bought me a sweet token of a gift. It could be anything, really. People said, "Oh, shit," all the time in the normal course of things, and some people just use terms of affection, like "honey." It wasn't as if I'd just heard him having sex with a woman, or professing his love to her. It wasn't as if I had irrefutable visual evidence. Maybe he hadn't hung up on me at all. Maybe he just lost the connection at that instant. This was an exercise that engaged him before, especially in recent years, one on which I actually prided myself, believing that it said as much about my self-confidence as about my faith in my husband. But I didn't feel very proud or confident in that agonizing moment, as I sipped my wine, waiting for my husband to call me back. When after several minutes my phone still didn't ring, I told myself to be proactive and try him again. It went to voicemail. I left a message, then texted another, and another. I began to freak out, at least my version of freaking out, which was really just sitting very still, staring into space, and imagining Kirk kissing a younger, more beautiful woman. I told myself that her age or beauty was irrelevant. Unfaithful was unfaithful. Maybe someone my age or older who had real substance and life experience and significant accomplishments might actually hurt worse. Finally, he called. I took a deep breath and said hello.
"Hey, what's up?"
he asked, so innocently that it made him sound even more guilty. "Nothing," I said. "Where are you?"
"What do you mean?"
he asked, through a yawn that sounded fake. Or at least exaggerated. "I mean, where are you?"
"I'm in Dallas."
"Where in Dallas?"
"My room."
"Which hotel?"
"The mansion on Turtle Creek," he said, where I always stay.
Who are you with?
Nobody.
Who were you with an hour ago, when you pocket-dialed me?
I pocket-dialed you?